tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabe. Anabe is the only machine washable sofa inside and out where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new week here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, sitting across from me at the Supernatural News desk with his little visor and press badge on. The one, the only, the master of disaster, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening. I also use this visor when I play poker.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, I never get invited, so I wouldn't know.
Well, you never come over. I mean, well, I invited you once, but Tim, you said the dogs I was playing poker with weren't legitimate poker players,
Dave.
Well,
it wasn't that bothered me. It was that you had peanut butter rubbed all over yourself playing poker with dogs, Tim. That just seemed weird to me.
Well, occasionally I like to take a break from poker, Dave.
Hey, we've got a great week lined up. Christopher Maggard is going to join us tomorrow to discuss his book, Chasing the Haunt. We'll walk with Chris on his historical journey into the unknown from his early years when he witnessed the most horrific supernatural attacks on his family in Southern California to Northern Kentucky, and also some urban legends and supernatural stories he's collected along the way. Then, working our way into the Easter weekend, Tim, we've got Lucinda Gabriel, who'll join us on Wednesday, discussing her book, How to Talk to Angels, A Practical Guide to Asking for Guidance, Comfort, and Strength. And in this day and age, Tim, that's needed, much needed.
Yes, it is.
Joseph Marino joins us, Tim. A former Benedictine monk will join us on Thursday. His book, Wrapped Up in the Shroud, The Chronicle of a Passion, a former monk's life changing, or a former monk's life-changing odyssey into the enigma of Christianity's most revered relic, the Shroud of Turin. That's a fascinating story to me. And there are so many different angles. We're going to talk about that on Thursday. Friday, Dr. Lauren Belge joins us, and she's written a book called Near Death in the ICU, Stories from Patients Near Death and Why We Should Listen to Them. I had her on Coast to Coast AM. Two days ago,
yes.
Friday or Saturday night.
Yep.
She was fascinating.
Yes.
And this interview, although we'll touch on some of the same points, she's bringing new stories to us, new angles. Plus, we have a brand new theater of the mind direct from my own personal life, Tim. I'm going to share one of my stories, and you're a part of it as well, Tim. So getting to play you, Morgan Freeman.
Really?
No, not at all. He was much too expensive. The only guy I could afford to play you is you. So Tim will be in the this week's Theater of the Mind portraying himself, but I'm not sure he was very believable. Anyway, that's
what I'd rather have Morgan Freeman, to be honest.
Taking place on Friday. Tonight's show is brought to you by a brand new sponsor, Tim. and somebody I'm very confident with because I work with this organization.
Yeah.
Right. It is Birch Gold. And they teach you how to invest in gold and silver so you can protect your savings and how you can legally move your IRA or 401k out of risky stocks and bonds and into precious metals IRA. To get your no-cost, no-obligation kit, go to birchgold.com/darkness. That's www.birchgold.com/darkness. Today's episode is also brought to you by the world's largest shopping place, Tim. No, not the Mall of America.
No.
The most large indoor shopping place might be Mall of America,
right,
or that one in Toronto.
Yeah.
But the world's largest online shopping arena, Amazon.com.
Oh, yeah.
So when you want to make a purchase on Amazon.com for whatever your needs, please do us a favor. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the killer deals link. While you're there, make sure you click on the right Amazon.com link, whether you're in the UK, Canada, or the United States. Put all of your purchases through that link, and a small portion of every sale goes to help fund this show and keep us on the air, pays all of our administrative and streaming fees. So please do that and help your buddies out here as we continue to bring you the best in paranormal talk radio. And Tim?
Yes.
I have some interesting news.
Okay.
We did, as you know, an experiment.
Yes.
For the last 3 weeks, bringing True Crime Tuesday back to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the network said, no, we really want Darkness Radio to just be beyond the darkness and just bring us the best in paranormal talk radio 5 days a week.
Right.
That's where we want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need from you.
Right.
And we don't have a place for True Crime Tuesday and Beyond the Darkness. So they gave us a sixth show.
Oh.
Standing all on its own, like the big boy it is, Tim.
Ah.
In a couple of weeks, you'll get 5 days a week of Beyond the Darkness. And every Tuesday, you can join Tim and Dave, your deceptive detectives. Is that the way to go?
Deceptive detectives.
As we go true crime-in every True Crime Tuesday. So you guys wanted it. You got it. Podcast One and all of the higher ups saw what we're doing and saw the reaction. Tim, this is pretty astounding.
Okay.
They pull our numbers usually on Friday,
yeah,
to give us an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And True Crime Tuesday has been outpacing the rest of our shows by about 25%.
Wow.
So it's pretty huge. They are impressed. So we got it. 6 days a week now, you get Tim and I, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's twice on Tuesday, Tim.
Twice on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's the way we like it, son. Twice on Tuesday.
Like a good doctor.
That's right. Keep your hump day for yourself. We're doing it twice on Tuesday.
That's right.
All right. So that's what's going on. Tonight is Supernatural News and Parashare. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, your Supernatural News correspondent at the Supernatural News desk, Tim Dennis. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
Breaking news. What's going on in the world around us?
Well, Dave, this we're starting out with a little PSA for all the fellas out there.
Pardon me?
A little PSA.
Oh, geez. Don't get it on yourself.
No, I'll try not to. I learned how to shake it off properly when I was
young. Excellent. What's a PSA for the fellas?
A public service announcement, Dave, for the fellas out there.
Okay.
If you're looking to get lucky with a mermaid, mm-hmm, abandon all hope ye here.
Wait, what? Ariel is so hot. I mean, for a cartoon. I mean, not that I would dig a cartoon chick unless it's Belle because she's unbelievable.
Well,
but
yeah.
And Tinkerbell, too. It's something that Belle just kind of does me. But Ariel rhymes with Belle, so you can see my attraction. Anyway, so now you're harshing my gig, Tim.
Well, yeah, Dave, because there's real life evidence that a daring Gakwe mermaid has snatched two boys and shown them off before killing them.
This sounds fishy to me.
I see what you did there. In a rather stranger than fiction case, which left people at Village 7 under Chief Nemungwe.
Uh-huh.
Know him personally in Gakwe.
No, you don't.
I don't. Shocked. Two boys died under unclear circumstances after they were reportedly snatched by a suspected mermaid.
I'll help you with the big words.
Thank you. At Pacamumvuri Dam.
Not at Pacamumvuri Dam. I've got a summer home there.
Do you?
No.
It's very lovely there. It
sounds out of doors to me.
Time of year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is reported that the mystical creature first pulled the boys, who were playing near the dam, underwater, only to resurface with them alive.
Oh, see? She was just playing with them, Tim.
That's what they all do, Dave. They're
is that
women.
What it is?
Yeah.
Oh, ouch. Please send your hate mail directly to Tim's house, which is at 328. What?
They don't need to send it to the house. Fine. I have an email address.
All right. All right. Yeah. Okay. Send it to tim@darknessradio.com.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. While adult witnesses who had gathered at the scene when the boys first disappeared were counseling the children on a rocky outcrop near the dam, their hysterical parents appeared, evidently because they weren't ready for mermaids yet. You got to graduate to that, Dave.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, you start off with the girls your own age, and then you graduate to the mermaids.
Yeah, I'd dive right in for the mermaids,
Tim. I bet you would. Mm-hmm. It is said the parents made the mistake of crying about the near-death experiences of the boys, and the mermaid grabbed the two minors again. Because why not give it a go a second time?
Oh, so because you're whining that she was just toying with them, she's like, hey, you thought that was bad. Watch this.
Yeah. The mermaid went, here, hold my beer, grab the two boys.
What?
And had a second go at it.
Mm-hmm. And then, my mermaid call.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you've been with a mermaid once or twice.
Better than.
Yeah, that's a Sasquatch mermaid.
Yeah.
You don't want them. They're quite hairy and go under quicker.
Pardon me?
The weight of the hair, Dave.
They go down quicker, you say?
They do.
Well,
don't ask me how I know that. Well, let's just say I've been slumming with a few of the mermaids who don't get picked at the dance right away, if you know what I mean.
There are mermaid wallflowers?
There are. And I've managed to hit every single one of them.
That one's got tusks. She's Tim.
Well, they're easier to grab onto that way.
Oh, my own.
We've digressed.
Yes.
It said the parents made the mistake of crying about the near-death experiences of the boys, and the mermaid grabbed the two minors again and disappeared under the water, this time for good.
Jeez.
Yeah. Traditionally, it's believed that when a person is taken by a mermaid, people are not supposed to cry. There's no crying in mermaids.
What? That sounds like a BS rule to me.
It is.
Uh-huh.
As doing so can lead to dire consequences, leading to the death of the victim.
Jeez.
Yeah. Police have since launched investigations into the case, which go a lot like this. They're eating donuts. This is my eating donut impression.
Police officers, you can send your hate mail to tim@darknessradio.com.
So what do you think about this mermaid, man? This is no good, huh?
Where did this take place?
Ngakwe.
Is that Jamaican?
Depository.
Uh-huh.
No, it's a kind of a little African-Jamaican thing I did.
So the mermaid punishes you. Is that the equivalent of when your dad goes, you crying? You want something to cry about? And then she drowns the kids because you were whining about it the first time?
I can't tell you how many times as a teenager I punished the mermaid. Just saying. Acting Midlands Provincial Police Spokesperson Assistant Inspector Ethel Mukwende.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 10 minutes to practice that line.
Did it really?
Said no. Said investigations were in progress to ascertain what really transpired, because evidently they don't believe this to save their lives.
No.
I can confirm that we are investigating a case of sudden death by drowning, which occurred at Village 7 under Chief Namengwe on the February 19th at around 12 p.m. when two miners who were herding cattle drowned and their bodies were later retrieved by fellow villagers, she said.
Do you think the villagers are like, those two boys, they're assholes. I say we drown them and blame it on a mermaid.
They went Irish at the end.
It's Irish.
I say we drowned them.
It's that already. Part of the Irish settlement in Jamaica.
Right, yeah. Somewhere near Africa. Before the incident, the creature had reportedly been seen on the banks of the dam several times. Confirming the shocking incident, Chief Namengwe, whose jurisdiction the area falls under, said a cleansing ceremony had since been conducted at the dam to calm the water spirits, because you want to do that.
Right, yeah.
It is reported that on the fateful day, because that mermaid ain't faithful to nobody, tell you. Mm-hmm. She took on two at the same time.
What?
I'm just saying.
All right.
She's a little bit of a getting around, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It is reported that on the fateful day, the two boys who were in Form 1 and 2 at Gagne Secondary School were herding cattle when they saw the mermaid at the dam. And then went, damn, that mermaid is fine.
Fine, son.
Bonk, bonk. They were chickens?
I don't know.
According to a friend at the deceased
chicken
boys.
Chicken of the sea.
Tastes like chicken. That's what I heard.
Wow.
According to a friend of the deceased boys, his companions jumped into the dam and tried to grab the mermaid because they believed it was just a big fish. If you're herding cattle and you have cattle for dinner, why would you need fish?
Because maybe you get tired of beef.
Hey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the mermaid pulled them down into the water, said Chief Namengwe. I think I've mispronounced that about 10 times.
No, now. I think you nailed it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I know the two boys didn't. Thank you! Because it was a mermaid and... Never mind. The friend then ran home to alert the elders, who arrived at the dam to find the boys lying on a rock alive. Mm. When their parents got to the dam, they panicked, believing their children had died, and started crying. There's no crying in mermaids.
Right.
A whirlwind suddenly engulfed the place before the mermaid swiftly appeared from the water and grabbed the boys for the second time. But this time their lifeless bodies resurfaced later, said Chief Namengwe.
Oh.
Yeah. According to the chief, the latest victims were not the first to meet their demise at the dam.
What?
Under mysterious circumstances. That's right, Dave.
That damn dam?
That damn dam. Damn dam. Wasn't that one of Barney Rubble's kids?
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
He was Bam Bam's more nefarious cousin.
Right.
He was a rapper, too. The Notorious Damn Dam.
The Notorious Damn Dam. I have all his albums at home.
Damn, 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 damn.
Two other people that I'm aware of, said Chief Namengwe. It's Chief Namengwe, yes. Two other people that I am aware of were also killed at the same dam in similar circumstances. As a community, man, we have since performed some rituals to calm down the water spirits.
Yeah, it wouldn't be calmed down until there was a fish fry on Friday, in my opinion.
And by the way, there's a special on mermaid this week at the local fish market.
May I interest you today in our fresh catch of the day? It is Ariel.
During the ceremony, we slaughtered a beast and the meat was consumed without salt, said Chief Namengwe.
That'll show the mermaids.
Mainly because of the blood pressure thing in the village.
Yeah.
Work on the pumps at Sengwa 2 and Guahanva Dam in Gakwe once stopped after terrified workers complained of machines breaking down under mysterious circumstances and blamed mermaids. Because they're responsible for all this stuff, let me tell you.
Wow, mermaids are janky like that.
They are. And they're anti-union. I don't know if you know that. The work later resumed after traditional healers brewed beer and carried out some rites to appease the water spirits. Evidently, you get those water spirits drunk, they can't do a thing.
Mm-mm.
No, they're lazy after that. A mermaid is a legendary aquatic creature, in case you didn't know this, with the upper body of a female human. That's the fun side, Dave. And the tail of a fish. The
flotation
not so
devices?
Yes.
Yes.
And the tail of a fish, which is the tasty side.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mermaids appear in the folklore of many cultures worldwide, including the Near East, Europe, Africa, and Asia, in case you're
I love the song Africa by Asia. Is there a tie in there?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Wow, that's kind of weird and creepy.
Weird and creepy.
Yeah, and that there's so many people that believe in it. All right.
Right.
Tim. Oh, look at this.
No, before you get carried away here,
How come you get to revel whenever there's some kind of
thing? You go ahead and revel.
Our battle is on, son. When there are zombie stories or potential zombie outbreaks, I think it's important that we play that up as well as we do your Terminator Skynet nonsense.
You go ahead, because when you read the headline of the story, Dave.
Yeah. That's all I need to read, Tim.
This guy is
delusional. I don't have time for fake news. All I can afford to read is fake headlines. So what have we got?
This man evidently was delusional in his belief that there's a zombie apocalypse.
Oh, was he?
Much like most people.
Maybe that's what the government wants you to believe, Tim.
Fake news. An Overland Park man was sentenced for killing a woman he thought was a zombie.
Oh, interesting.
Because zombies aren't real, Dave.
Are we sure?
Oh, we're positive. An Overland Park man was sentenced on Monday to nearly 17 years in prison.
Yikes.
Think about that before you kill your next zombie, people.
Right.
For strangling and beating a woman to death last year.
Oof.
Christopher Dwayne Wallace.
Or beating her to re-death.
No, she was never dead to begin with.
I don't know. No. Could be a zombie.
No relation to Notorious B.I.G., Christopher Dwayne Wallace, was under the influence of methamphetamine. There's a shock. And later told police he thought 35-year-old Jennifer Lopez, no relation to the singer.
Really?
Yeah.
Jenny from the Blocks, no relation.
No.
Okay.
Was a zombie. And when he attacked her in January 2016, 38-year-old Wallace pled no contest in February and was found guilty of second-degree murder in Lopez's death.
Okay.
On Monday, a Johnson County judge followed plea negotiations and sentenced Wallace to 16 years and 11 months in prison. Because that 12th month would have put him over.
Right.
Right. Wallace had called Overland Park police to the apartment he and Lopez shared. And the just imagine that. Christopher Wallace and Jennifer Lopez were living together. I mean, that's normally, that's TMZ news.
Yeah, well, it's not the Jennifer Lopez. We've already hit that point.
Right, yeah. I'm just saying. Shared in the 6100 block of Foster Street and said he had beaten his roommate to death, according to court documents. After he was arrested, Wallace told police that he'd been high on the old methamphetamine. He was riding the snake, Dave.
Riding the snake. I thought that's riding a horse. No, that's H. That's smack.
That's
the heroin.
Let's keep our drugs straight, Dave.
According to Starsky and Hutch references. Right, yeah. That's as far as I go.
That's very 70s of you,
riding
Huggy
the snake.
Bear.
Yeah.
He said he had fallen asleep, and when Lopez woke him up, he began beating her because he thought she was a zombie, according to the document.
Well, but how did he wake her, or how did she wake him? Was it chewing and eyes smoked out? You don't know. See how they leave that part of the story out? Because the government doesn't want us to know, Tim. Men in black have hidden it from us. Neil Armstrong and Glenn Frey don't want us to know the truth, Tim.
She probably just walked over and shook him, and then he was like, ah!
Yeah.
And then he went, da-na-na, 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 and started doing the...
What was that?
Walking Dead theme.
Really? That sounded more like a dance song.
It was not.
That sounds more like
and
a dance
And then he was
song.
Like, ah, I gotta kill you! And then that was it. He was delusional, Dave. Just gotcha. Delusional. Just delusional.
I've got to read an email, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Because I find this funny.
Okay.
We have a listener who wrote in. You know, on Thursdays, we do... Theater of the Mind, where we take a listener's story.
You mean Friday?
Fridays. I'm sorry. Fridays, right. We do Theater of the Mind,
yes.
Where we take a listener's story.
Yep.
And we bring it to life.
Right.
With music and sound effects. Uh-huh. And I think amazing Emmy and possibly Grammy Award winning storytelling.
Wow.
I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I'm patting myself on the back.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got an email from Dylan.
Okay.
Tim.
Yes.
And Dylan says, thank you for your time. First of all, let me say I love the show. My family and I have listened for the past 2 or 3 years. However, I just listened to the Imminent Danger in the Woods episode. The episode itself was great. All of these different stories only validate the existence of these creatures, in my opinion. The complaint I have is that the Theater of the Mind skit. Bigfoot versus Mama Bear should have been an epic battle for the ages, but the generic animal sounds and cheesy hero music you put in the background ruined it. This is the only Theater of the Mind skit I've heard that was corny. Forgive me for my criticism. Well, unfortunately, Dylan, real audio of a Bigfoot grappling a mama bear, not available as much as you'd think it would be.
Here's the deal, Dylan. I'm only on 1 foot right now, and unfortunately, my little knee caddy won't allow me to get into the forest to record that.
You wussy.
Yeah.
So that's the only one he doesn't like. He, you know, forgive his criticism. I don't mean to sound displeased at all. I was just one skit that got under my skin. Yeah. And here's the deal. I've heard some people are like, it really detracts from the reality. We tell you what it's called, Theater of the Mind. We're trying to bring the story to life and give you something a little different in the storytelling, because on Mondays, you hear me just read the story straight out.
I actually saw two people on Facebook who said it got them right in the feels.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point is, you know, I mean, it's going to hit some people. It's not going to hit others.
Yeah.
Some people don't want it to be fleshed out into a narrative that they can almost see happening and unfolding in their mind. I don't know what to tell you. You know, they're not all going to be Oscar caliber, but the fact of the matter is we do what we can with it, you know, and for the majority, people seem to dig them.
Dylan, you're kind of cold. I killed the baby bear in that thing.
No, he didn't.
I killed the baby
bear.
Don't
say that. You're going to get
killed
people believing it.
Killed the baby bear for you, Dylan.
Jeez, that's brutal. I love it. Should have been more epic. Well, you know, we got to have some music in the background and the battling and generic noises. I mean, you do what you can do. And I think, Tim, you're doing an excellent job on Beyond the Darkness. We'll keep you around for at least another couple of weeks. I just want you to have that confidence.
I appreciate that, boss. I appreciate that.
And here's something we're working on. A little later on this year, we will have CDs of Theater of the Mind available for you.
Oh, there you go.
So that you can have collections of all of the amazing stories Dylan doesn't like.
Yes. So, Dylan, you can have all those in one collection.
Dylan
so
likes them all except for this one. And that's okay, Dylan. We appreciate the insight and the thoughts.
Stand on the roof of your house, throw them off the roof, and then hit them with a shotgun if you'd like.
Yeah.
For a certain price. Yep.
What a crappy sound effect you just used there, Tim.
Well, thank you. I try to find the crappiest sound effects I can.
Just I'm actually pretty pleased with most of the sound effects you have.
Thanks.
I'm not going to lie. I think some of them are pretty cool.
I produce them in my bathroom with bodily functions. Mm-hmm. So I hope you're
I don't even want to know what creates the Bigfoot sound. All right, well, let's get back to it. What's our next story in the world of the supernatural?
We go to supernatural Staffordshire, sure, Dave.
Sure.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Where a family has called in a priest after a demon has entered their home.
All right. Well, that's a good guy to call.
Evidently, he was selling Amway.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Hi, my name's Lou Lucifer, and I've got, I don't know why I'm always, my evil voice Rolf sounds like the Rolf the dog.
Yeah.
Hey there, Rolf the dog here. You might know me as Lucifer.
I do love it, though. Yeah. It makes me giggle.
Somebody said that the anniversary, 75th anniversary battle of Los Angeles.
Yes.
He said, Dave, I'm sorry. All I could imagine was Rolf the dog telling me that story.
You know what? I gotta chime in.
Should have put a little piano behind it on that one.
Well, when you said it was a professor, and then he had this gruff voice, I thought, what kind of professor sounds like he
I was trying to make him sound old. It's all I got, man.
I know
like four voices in my repertoire: Homer Simpson, a bad Arnold Schwarzenegger, apparently Rolf the dog, and Snallygaster. I figured that you would want to hear somebody that sounded like a seasoned vet telling that story instead of, and then my family went outside and we saw the lights in the sky. It was frightening.
No, but I totally want to learn from that professor now.
Do you?
I want to find him, because he's old and grizzled.
Yeah, right? That's what
your textbooks to.
Right, it was the 75th anniversary, and he was already like 10, so that put him at 85. I was trying to come up with a voice that would work for
that. I got it.
This was the other one I was toying with.
Yeah.
And then I looked up into the sky, and there were lights everywhere. I looked into my mother. I looked into my mother's eyes, and the way it reflected off of the deepening pools of brown, I told her, you are the most beautiful woman on the planet. But you see how that wouldn't have the same impact as hearing, and then we went out and saw the dog. So I guess it was more like Rolf the dog in the elderly stages of his life.
Oh, right. Oh, elderly Rolf.
Yeah. Elderly Rolf, which is never going to be a cartoon on its own.
That would be a great miniseries, a great documentary.
Is he's like reflecting back on his life with the Muppets?
A one-man play.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm going to get a Rolf the dog costume, and I'm going to do Rolf the dog, the one-man play. Play.
Reflecting back on his life with the Muppets.
I remember my time with Kermit.
That one time where Gonzo went off the deep end and killed his chicken.
Why are you making him sound like a hillbilly?
I don't know. I got no idea.
So anyway, so Satan came to town.
Satan selling comes Amway. Down. Selling Amway.
Hey, I've got some soap that's biodegradable. And if you want to be evil, not so biodegradable.
Right. See? North Staffordshire paranormal investigator Damon Sims.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is a tale from him.
Okay.
Brings you the latest tale of supernatural in Stoke-on-Trent.
Okay.
He says, angels and demons, good and bad, the full spectrum of the human psyche, being human. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People do amazing things every day and carry out heartwarming acts of kindness and love.
They do.
There are others who demonstrate atrocities and acts of pure evil.
That's true.
This week's account is from a gentleman called Donovan.
Donovan.
At the time, he was 10 years old and lived in Penkel.
Mm.
Penkel.
Okay.
Right. The year was 1984.
Ah, oh, good year.
Oh, yeah, it was. Don.
My hair was on point that year, son.
My hair was pointy that year,
that's
son.
That's true.
Yeah.
You were spiky. I was wavy.
Right. Uh-huh. Don, now 43, was brought up in a devout Catholic background and spent many days reading and learning about the Bible and its many teachings.
Okay.
He was evidently very lonely.
Sure.
It was something I loved to do, says Don. Learning about Christ and his sacrifices taught me a lot about life and myself, to be honest. My father was involved with the local church, and we would spend a lot of our free time at the church together. I have really fond memories of growing up.
Dun, 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 dun.
And that's when the machines moved in. Oh, you are screwed!
The Jesusinator.
The Jesusinator. Young Jeezy. Living with his father, mother, and younger twin sister, Don enjoyed a happy, carefree childhood. Until one day, late in 1984... I'm waiting for the music.
Oh. Good. Dun, dun, wake dun, me dun, up dun. Before you go.
No.
Rolf the dog brings you the best of 1984.
And when you
don't leave me hanging on like a yo-yo.
Until one day in late 1984. When
come with me if you want salvation. It's the Jesusinator, Tim.
The Jesusinator.
Oh, gosh.
When he was alone in his kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
when I hit puberty, evidently.
Right.
It started with a buzzing sound.
You hit puberty in the kitchen?
I did.
All right.
It was embarrassing.
I guess.
It was right around the kumquats.
Okay.
It started with a buzzing sound like someone had left something electrical switched on, says Don. Hey, wait, that's not a knife. It's blunt. No.
What?
It was a noise I hadn't heard before. I looked but couldn't find the source. It seemed to move around the room from one side to the next. Then I noticed a smell. He said it was like rotten meat.
Trying to do my own theater of the mind here and show you just how talented Tim really is.
A terrible smell that really unnerved me. Then early one morning at about 3 a.m., Don awoke. I'm rooster at 3 a.m. Don awoke to a noise coming from outside his bedroom door. It was paw on the.
Oh, God.
It was paw in the outhouse.
Okay.
It sounded like an animal was sniffing under the door, which was scary.
Hey, anybody up in there?
And then we didn't have a dog or a cat. I froze in bed and didn't dare move. Since the animal could be heard sniffing under the door as if it were hunting for food or someone.
Hi-yo, anybody in there?
It sounded big, and I seemed to remember.
Hi-yo, anybody in there?
And it even grunted at one point, says Don. Petrified, he began to scream for help.
Ah! Help! Help! Help!
The noise stopped when his father and mother ran into his room.
What the hell's going on in here? Oh, do tell. See, people are going to be begging for your theater of the mind
right.
From now on, yeah.
That's right. That's when I smelt the rotting meat smell again.
Good Lord, boy. Put the bologna sandwiches away.
And the buzzing noise started up. With my confused and terrified parents being witness to it this time as well, all three of us heard it. The following day, Don's parents brought a priest into the home for a cleansing.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, priest. It worked, and they never experienced anything like it again.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. I think that's royalty-free, right?
It is, yes, okay. Yes. Humans can be pure or evil. Mm-hmm. So can spirits.
I know some people that are purely evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it. The end. It is so anticlimactic.
Well, that is. But it had an amazing theater of the mind brought to you by Dave Schrader. So you can choose now, Dylan. Do you prefer Tim's masterful art or do you want my stories? Sorry about that. All right. What's your next story?
The most unscary demonic haunting ever in the history of demonic hauntings.
I've come for your soul. That feels good. Scratch behind my ear. Where you see a guy that blue or that green have the blues that bad.
Are these shadowy figures filmed by ghost hunters at a grade 2 listed former pub? The troubled spirits of monks who were burnt alive in the 16th century? The question has been asked.
Bummer.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Boy, we brought the room down in a hurry, didn't
yeah.
we? A group of ghost hunters visited a renowned paranormal hotspot in Mansfield. 36-year-old Dan Litchfield went with his team and captured a photo of an eerie figure. Ghost hunters have revealed footage of a shadowy figure stalking them in a grade 2 listed building where 7 monks were thought to have been burnt alive. 36-year-old Dan Litchfield and his team were investigating the renowned paranormal hotspot, the village in Mansfield, Nottinghamshire, or Shire, as they say there in the old English countryside, mm-hmm. when their camera caught an eerie figure in the darkness. The group were even more stunned when another photo in a different part of the former pub and slaughterhouse showed another suspected ghoul.
Boo!
Legend has it that tunnels led from the nearby Newstead Abbey to the site, and monks who had sought refuge were slaughtered during the dissolution of the monasteries. Dissolution, evidently my hard word of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Litchfield from Gloucester said catching a full apparition on camera is like the Holy Grail in paranormal investigations. That sort of thing doesn't happen very often. You normally see some things that can be attributed to pareidolia when you see a shape or figure when nothing's actually there, but the shadow figure was unbelievably clear.
Now, you're looking at the video. Does it look clear to you?
Somewhat.
Shadowy monks?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a monk or the Grim Reaper.
Walking down the street. How can you tell? From a distance in the dark wearing a cloak, it could be a Jawa.
Well, when you put it that way, yeah, it does kind of, or a sand, one of the sand people.
No, although they're Tusken Raiders.
Here's the thing. Okay, so there's the hood. There's the, I know.
Good radio,
This could be, this could also be a description of something else in a doctor's office.
It could just be shadow from something else in the room playing on that wall.
Although this could be like a, an arm with the cloak hanging down off the arm. What the hell is this hooked thing right around the pelvis?
It's called a sickle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or an incredibly hooked genital area. Mr. Litchfield, I read that. You normally see some things that can be attributed to pareidolia when you see a shape or figure when nothing's actually there, but the shadow figure was unbelievably clear, he said. It was our first time there. It is known to be a major hotspot in the field and well-known as one of the best places to visit, so we had wanted to go. It had been on my bucket list for quite a while, he said. I never thought we would get something as good as this. I'd hoped to, but never thought I would. We also had a photo that was taken by another person in the building that night. He actually found a similar shadowy figure within a different part of that area. The fact that the figure was caught twice in two different spots, 10 feet apart, that obviously reinforces that sighting, he went on to say.
Ooh, that one's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that one's not bad. Yeah.
Maybe we'll put a link up to this over at... on one of our social media pages.
There you go. The,
follow me on at Darkness Radio on Twitter, and I'll make sure we post it there.
There you
go. Or follow at Dr. Tim Dennis, and he'll post it as well.
Built in 1802, the village has served as a slaughterhouse, a malt house, and even a nightclub. Mm-hmm. But it's said to have been based on a site that was once contained an old barn. Under that barn was reportedly a tunnel which led to Newstead Abbey, located a few miles south of Mansfield. Legend has it that the tunnel was used by the resident monks of the abbey to escape the English authorities during the dissolution of the monasteries period of the late 1530s. The monks fled through the tunnels and sought refuge in the barn. Upon finding them, the authorities burned down the barn, with the group still inside, killing all of them.
Yeesh.
Yeah, I know. They didn't believe in mercy back then, evidently. Mr. Litchfield, who found the UK Ghost Hunters Collective in 2012, said, with all that activity that we caught that night, it shows all the evidence in the place is amazing. We hope to go back there later in the year.
All right. Let's speed read. We've only got a little bit of time left here to do the rest of your stories, and I want to make sure we can get them in. So let's try to speed read some of these stories. This one was intriguing. You and I have both been to Tonopah.
Yes, we have.
All right. What's going on in Tonopah?
They found a mystery hole, Dave.
Pardon me?
A mystery hole.
Okay.
Not unusual.
Oinks, oinks, buddy. I think it's a mystery hole.
I've found many a mystery hole, Dave, but never in Tonopah.
Okay, I just want to clarify this, Tim, because people keep asking me about the weird farty noises that are not my mouth. Yeah. The weird chairs at old KNSI studio, these things are like something from like a Roy Rogers restaurant. They're clad in leather.
Right.
And when I move.
And they're buckety.
Listen, ready?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. Excuse you. Right.
So I get that a lot. People are like, he's just tearing them off during the show.
No.
I promise you it's not. I just don't have a quieter seat.
No baked bean dinners for us.
No. So I apologize for the squeaky.
Not quite squeaky.
Squeaky Asserton, which is my old rap name. So I apologize for those noises, but I want to clarify that is, in fact, listen.
That sounds full-bodied to me.
Yeah. Heady malt smell.
It actually does smell like a hamster cage in here.
It does. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Is it a well? Is it an abandoned mine shaft? One mother says it's a danger. It's a mystery hole.
Asps, very dangerous. You go first.
Hector Thompson and his mom, Michelle, discovered the mystery hole in the desert west of the valley while they were out for a walk near their Tonopah home. They stumbled across the feature they had never seen before near North 355th Avenue and West Van Buren Street. I think it's pretty old, Thompson said. The hole had no covering or warning signs. Hector did what any boy would do. He threw rocks at it.
That's not what any boy would do.
No.
You and I both know, A, we'd begin by spitting.
Yep.
Then B, we'd begin by weeing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then trying to sink something so deep in it to figure out how deep the hole
That's
was.
Right.
That, yeah.
Come here, Mom.
Yep. His mom had some bigger concerns. First of all, can you catch anything from the hole? Second of all, she says it gets dark out here, and that's just an accident waiting to happen.
It is.
She took the matter to Facebook. Neighbors debated, and no one could come up with a solid answer. Something involved with the Army, guessed Hector.
That's one big asshole out there.
It is a big asshole.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gotta be careful. You don't want to fall into that.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's some people who do want to take on that big asshole, Dave.
Yeah. I don't. Not me. I'm not a spelunker.
No?
No.
Not into big assholes?
I don't know if you're familiar. I'm just not. I'm not a big outdoorsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know what it is. I want to know what's in there, Thompson said, who can't stay away from big assholes to save their lives.
Right. Avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to sink into that. Because there's no telling how deep it is, and it's dangerous. Plus, it's all sandy there.
Right.
And if that sand starts pouring in on you,
you're done.
Diddly done.
Yep. Evidently, so did this news organization. They wanted to know what was in that big ass hole.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent a camera down nearly 30 feet before hitting the bottom. 30 feet of big ass hole, Dave.
Well, that's not that deep after all. 30 feet.
They
okay.
found mostly trash, a box.
What a surprise.
There's a box right near the big ass hole, Dave.
Gotcha.
And a bucket.
Really?
There's a bucket in the hole, dear Eliza, dear Eliza.
Puts the lotion in the bucket, or it gets the hose again.
And it found Buffalo Bill as well. The property where the pit was found is owned by the Bureau of Land Management. The area is not all that rural. It's only a short walk from several homes. Mm-hmm. An expert with American Pump and Well Service Repair says just by looking at a photo, he does not think it's a well. Whatever it is, Thompson made a makeshift covering for it, but hopes it'll get sealed off for good. They should have something, a warning sign or something put
UFO
up there.
UFO landing hole, I'm telling you.
Right, yeah. It's saucer-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, what's your next story?
Next story, a cult-obsessed student vanishes.
What?
Well, you're a cult-obsessed. Maybe an occult took you.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Authorities in Brazil are baffled by the bizarre disappearance of a college student obsessed with the occult and aliens. Bruno Borges, no relation to Bruno Mars, went missing late last month from the town of Rio Branco, leaving behind a jaw-dropping bedroom and many unanswered questions, including where he is today. Footage of the 25-year-old man's bedroom is simply breathtaking as Borges covered the walls with coded text and odd diagrams.
Mm.
Yeah, well, you do that when you're obsessed with the occult.
Yeah.
Additionally, the room also sports a quite large and rather creepy statue of Giordano Bruno, a 16th century philosopher and theorist who expounded upon the possibilities of space, including exoplanets, and was burned at the stake largely because of it. While that Bruno is indeed a fascinating character, his contemporary namesake of sorts clearly boasts quite the story as well. Inspired by the famed philosopher, Borges reportedly told family members and friends that he was working on a series of books that would transform the world. These books, also written in code, were left behind by Borges when he vanished, bound and arranged in an unsettling manner reminiscent of the Heaven's Gate cult. The contents of Borges' proverbial masterwork has purportedly been decoded by a computer expert in Brazil, but the writings have been yet to be revealed, aside from a few vague sentences. According to his sister, the young man had locked himself in his room for 24 straight days, working on what he called his project.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly thereafter... That's not his project, Dave. Shortly thereafter, he simply vanished without a trace. As one can expect, the case has created a firestorm of speculation over what has become of Borges, and if it was related to his work. Skeptical observers have suggested that his entire project, quote unquote, was the result of a mental breakdown, which culminated with his subsequent disappearance. Others have wondered, perhaps, if Borges' research led him to some kind of occult breakthrough that allowed him to contact aliens in a manner which we can only hope can be found in his writings. Whether they will ever see the light of day likely depends on the Brazilian authorities or Borges, should he be found.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you got another... What else you got here? Yeah, go ahead with that. Spooky college ghost, huh?
Yes, a college ghost. Okay. Evidently, learning doesn't stop when you get to the afterlife.
Good.
An eerie piece of footage from a university in England caused some students and teachers to suspect that there is a ghost lurking in their midst. The vexing video shows what looks like to be an apparition of some kind sitting at a computer in an empty classroom and was posted to the Stockton Riverside College Facebook page. Since it appeared online last week, the footage has caused a small furor at the university, with students and faculty attempting to spot the spirit that haunts the room. However, administrators can hold off on calling in an exorcist, as staff at the school have managed to solve the mystery of the ghost. Evidently, it's a Scooby-Doo deal.
What?
According to one of the professors who
would have worked too if it weren't for you blasted kids and that stupid dog.
Exactly.
Stupid dog. Screw you.
According to one of the professors who oversees the classroom, which serves as a computer lab, the ghost is merely an infamous trick of light and shadow. Specifically, the spirit is the result of a complex series of reflections happening at the same time. If a student is in the other classroom, then the light must bounce off of four windows and the door of a server cabinet, Paul Abbey told Gazette Live, explaining that these circumstances make the semi-transparent reflection show up in the perfect place. Mm-hmm. The remarkable optical illusion has captivated visitors to the window because seeing the ghost requires a certain combination of timing and illumination for it to occur. So while the university may not harbor a ghost, it does boast an awesome attraction that will no doubt delight visitors during the next parents' weekend.
All right, we got time, I think. What's your headlines? Let's choose one of the last couple of stories here.
Either The Watcher Writes Again or, it's The Watcher Writes Again.
Oh, this is kind of a creepy story. We covered this a while ago. Go ahead and fill us in on this. We'll wrap up with this for Supernatural and Bizarre News.
Okay, so there's a guy named The Watcher who mm-hmm. evidently has been writing to different people who move into this home. Mm-hmm. And tells people that he's been watching them for quite some time. Well, mm-hmm. the saga of the Watcher is also continuing on. Because evidently I'm from out east mm-hmm. as well. Appears to be far from over, as the mysterious writer recently sent another letter to the New Jersey home plagued by the unsettling missives. Now the center of a contentious court battle, the bizarre case began back in 2014 when a family purchased a new home in the town of Westfield and soon received three threatening letters. In the chilling notes, a person calling themselves The Watcher claimed that they were the rightful caretaker of the property and intimated that the family was in danger because they bought the house. A subsequent lawsuit against the previous owners brought the tale to light and spawned a worldwide headline, as well as a TV movie, although The Watcher remained at large. Since that time, the stalker seemingly went silent after the letters successfully scared the family into not moving into the now abandoned home. However, the recent decision to rent the property apparently raised the ire of The Watcher, since it had been revealed that the home received a new letter from the haunting writer. In a court filing last week, an attorney for the family said that a fresh missive had arrived around the end of February and that it was the most unnerving one yet. The letter contained specific threats and was more derogatory and sinister than any of the previous letters, according to the attorney. Since the case is still being investigated, the filing did not include a copy of the letter, leaving one's own imagination to fill in the frightening blanks as far as what the watcher might have said. As to the reaction from the person currently renting the house who spawned the new watcher letter, he told a local reporter back in February that he was not concerned with the case. That said, when they returned to the home last week for a comment on the latest twist in the case, there was no one there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That is bizarre. It's been a strange case.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Listen. We've got some Parashare coming up, Tim.
Yep.
A lot of great stories. And you know those couple of black-eyed kid stories I put off last week?
Yep.
We'll read them this week. And a lot of people really pissed that I teased, including one of the authors. She's like, you got all excited. I got to hear you read my story. And then you guys went off on a different tangent.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
And we can still make them Theater of the Minds later on down the road. So we'll do that. But we've got a lot of great stories to share. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's time for Parashare. You get to shine. We're going to hear your stories next. Plus, we have a special guest joining us to share her story on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
All right. right, we're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Beyond the Darkness is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We just finished up with some supernatural news. Mr. Dennis, it's time to turn to Parashare.
Oh, yes.
And this is the part of the show, Tim. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. This is where we share paranormal experiences from our listeners.
Oh, is that what we do?
They can write in. Mm-hmm. And we're working diligently on ways to call and have some guests join us as a testing of that right now.
Okay.
We're going to talk to a guest right now, Tim,
okay,
that's going to share a paranormal experience.
All right.
And this is a fan favorite. She's back to share her real life experiences with the paranormal. Mm-hmm. She's dealing with a haunting right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, from Darkness Radio, she's back with us this evening to share a few stories. Our own beloved Katie Hart from Hart Music. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Dave and Tim, my boys.
How are you, sweetheart?
Oh, good. You know, living the life.
Well, that's the important part. We need to hear that. So let's hear what's going on. Now, you've had some weird experiences in the past, but you've purchased your first house. Is this right?
Yes.
And
yep, we just bought a house. Yep.
Okay, great. And you think something's already happening in the new house?
Yeah. So here's the deal. Do you want to hear what's happening and then the backstory?
No. We called just to catch up. Yeah, we want to hear what's going on. Yeah. So tell us what kind of activity and then tell us what you found out about this.
Okay. So when we first moved in, everything is fine. And in fact, and I should just say like right off the bat, like, there's nothing in the house that even feels remotely like sinister or anything. It always has been feeling like really welcoming and like nice. It's like, you know, when you like step inside a candy factory.
No.
It feels like that.
not exactly. But okay. I can imagine with you.
I've only been to one.
If by a candy factory you mean Taco Bell or KFC, yes, I can imagine the wonderment and excitement.
Well, it just feels nice. Like it's like very welcoming.
Sure. Right.
And so we like the house right off the bat, but, when I've been here by myself, there's been some door slamming and some stuff like that, which, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a door slamming. Like how scared can you get? But then there's the weirdest, the strangest thing.
Okay.
So I was cleaning the whole house. I was by myself.
That is strange. You're cleaning a house.
I have one of those vacuum cleaning robots, the Roomba.
Uh-huh.
And
lazy.
I had it up in our bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And I had closed two doors to keep it out of this one room that doesn't have any carpet. It's just like this wood tile stuff.
Okay.
And I went downstairs to continue cleaning while the little robot did its business up here, right? I come back upstairs. No Roomba.
No Roomba.
And it's in the room with the closed doors.
Ooh.
Huttering along.
Doom, doom, doom.
In the
doom,
one
doom.
Room that doom, I didn't doom, need it doom, in. And doom. I'm like,
Skynet.
What the hell? And I'm like, what? And what's even crazier is both doors were closed. So the Roomba, and I asked my husband, I'm like, did you put it in there for some reason? Like, he's like, no, I've been out in the garage the whole time. Like, why the hell? Like, it's just so weird. Like, in the very specific place, I didn't want the damn thing to go. Both doors, some door had to have opened.
Sounds like she's potty training.
And then shut behind it.
Sounds like you're potty training your Roomba. No, no, not on the nice wood floor. No.
Bah. But, you know, it's funny. It's like, every time, like, any of these kind of things happen, it's almost like it's like a joke. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I, you know, I've like joked about like door slamming and then something will slam and I'll be like, oh, you know what I mean? Or like this thing, the one thing I didn't want it to do. And there it was. I was like, it's kind of funny.
That's
right?
The only
I mean, it's
one
not
thing?
Like scary. It's kind of like, it's kind of funny,
right.
You know?
Yeah, I got you.
So I'm just like, well, there's obviously nothing to be afraid of here. Like, this is just like a funny, like weird situation. Like, it's like if I were a ghost. I would just do annoying stuff like that just to be like around. But
not
anyway,
not you, Katie.
So we end
Hart.
Up finding. No, right. So anyway, like we didn't know a ton about the owner, and this is actually, believe it or not, this is a single owner house. Like we were the second owners, which is pretty amazing because the house is built in like 1950,
right?
And that like never happened, so we were psyched about that. But we've been like talking to the neighbors. And And they're like, oh, man, that woman was a piece of work that used to live in your house. I'm like, really? And she said, yeah, in the upstairs room, which they're like, that must be your master. I'm like, yeah, yeah, because we essentially took the whole upstairs, which is like a dormer, and we made it just our master bedroom, right? Well, apparently she had a daughter who had cancer and who had died apparently pretty young, like 40, like young. And the neighbor said she was just terrified of her mom, right? And she would send this poor woman out while she was like her most weak, like chemotherapy, the whole nine, totally bald, everything else, to do like hard labor in the yard, like weeding the, you know, the grass and the flowers and stuff, like sealing the driveway, like things like that, right?
Holy cow.
And the neighbors would like come out and help her because it was like, God, this woman is dying.
No, why are hangers? Yeah, you got mommy dearest living there.
No, seriously. And, you know, we're talking like the neighbors were saying that, you know, she called the cops when the kids like hit the fence with a ball or like, you know, the leaves from the other neighbor's house were touching the fence and she'd freak out. And we're like, holy crap, we don't care. Do whatever you want, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently when this woman died, a lot of the neighbors, because everyone in our neighborhood has lived here for quite a while, except for like a handful of families. And apparently they said that at the funeral, the woman was like the mom or whatever that owned the house. Because the daughter who lived in our master bedroom died. She said at the funeral, the mom was just like deadpan, like didn't cry, no emotion, nothing. And they're saying that that woman, even at 40 years old, the woman who died, like, was still just terrified of this mom. And part of me thinks maybe, and I don't know, that maybe it might be the daughter, and maybe she likes us. I don't know up here. Because, like I said, like, there's nothing that's scary or anything. It's all just kind of, like, funny. You know?
Right. Just more like minor annoyances by locking your Roomba in the rooms.
Yeah, minor annoyances that I kind of find hilarious. You know what I mean? And it's very weird. And it's just like when we started hearing, we just literally heard these, like this part of the story mm-hmm. just the other day. I texted you about it like right after I heard of it because it was like, holy crap, that's a hell of a part of this story, you know?
Well, now, do you know the girl's name?
Daughter, but we didn't know about all that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know the girl's name.
Well, do a little research. You could also check.
I could go to that website.
Yeah, diedinhouse.com.
What is it, diedinhouse.com?
Right.
Yeah.
Diedinhouse.com is a great place to check out, and they might have some information. And then if you decide that you want some answers, Tim could come over and do a bloodletting and pentagram.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And try to evoke a demon to come in and give you answers.
Sure.
If that would help.
Yeah. Lower level.
I was hoping you guys would come over for a housewarming party, but this is great. We'll kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, Tim won't really enter your house because you have a Roomba that is working like an AI.
Yeah.
And you know his fear of Terminator.
My God.
Skynet. He doesn't want to get in there and find it bumping the hem of his garments trying to suck him into the Roomba.
Oh, my God.
So you've got weird paranormal activity. Yeah, you know, let's do it. Let's get a couple bottles of wine and just come over to your house. We'll make you sing Disney princess songs to us and see if we can't get the spirits flowing. I mean, the ghost show.
Lock up the Roomba first, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
The Roomba is safe and sound and charging right now.
Very, very cool. Or so you think.
It's never sleeping. It's always watching.
Yeah. It's going through your underwear drawer as we speak, Katie Hart.
Get out of there.
Well, thanks a lot for stopping by. And speaking of stopping by, are you going to join me at the console room? the Doctor Who convention here in Minnesota?
I believe I am.
Excellent.
I'm coming out, yes.
May 12th through the 14th at the Hilton Minneapolis St. Paul Airport Mall of America. Peter Davidson, the fifth Doctor, has been announced as their big guest for the year. And then just added to the bill, yours truly, Darkness Dave. I will be a part of a couple of different Woo! Panels, including a talk on time travel and the paranormal. So we're going to talk all kinds of wibbly wobbly, timey wimey stuff and have a great time out at the conference. If you're a Doctor Who fan, a Whovian, and you live anywhere near the Twin Cities, come on out. This is one of the premier Doctor Who conferences in the country, and it's a great time to come out and get a chance to meet Peter Davidson, Peter Capaldi. I'm going to be sandwiched between two Peters this year.
Dude, I am so jealous because I'm out at Eric Altman's Bigfoot camping adventure with my podcast during that stupid weekend when freaking Capaldi is going to be there.
Yeah, he's going to be here for Comic-Con, Minneapolis. He's going to be in town, so I'll get a chance to shake hands with two Peters and show them some love, which I'm all about.
Yeah, baby.
He's such a child.
Yeah, grab him.
So that's what we have going on. Again, check out information at darknessevents.com. You'll find a link to the console room and get your tickets now. Come on out. You can do the TARDIS escape room. You can have a lot of fun and get a chance to meet the fifth Doctor, Peter Davidson, all creatures great and small. Also, the father-in-law of the 10th Doctor, David Tennant, the father of Jenny, the Doctor's daughter. So you got a lot of great connections with this one guy. And I've told Tim he's going to look great mounted over my fireplace.
No, he is
the ultimate Doctor Who collectible.
Don't do it.
I'm planning on just capturing Peter Davidson and stuffing him.
No.
And putting him over my fireplace.
That's so messed up.
Yeah, whatever. It rubs the lotion in, Peter Davidson. All right. Thank you for joining us, Katie. It's great catching up with you. We'll talk to you again soon. And how can people check out your fun and entertaining podcast?
Yeah, you can look us up. It's One Bizarre Podcast, and we are on Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, all the same stuff you guys are on, SoundCloud. And, yeah, check us out. If you like the kind of crazy Monday stuff or what used to be the Friday stuff on Darkness Radio, that's pretty much us all the time. Get excited about your lives.
Oh, did you hear that, Tim?
Yeah.
So we could only do it one day a week. She brings it every day.
We call it gimmick infringement all in the wrestling business.
Yeah, you'll be hearing from our attorney's heart. All right. Thanks a lot. Take care. We'll talk to you again soon. We've got more story. What? Boop, boop. What was that? Oh, the Skype hang up?
Shut that off.
Nah. I want people to realize that was me hanging up on her. Okay. That was like a mic drop moment right there.
That was. Boop, yeah. Boop. That was very brave and bold of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a couple stories here, shall we?
Okay.
Here's some emailed stories. I listened to your podcast about the aggressive Bigfoot. I have seen these type up close and personal. In the early 90s, I was with the teams in the Navy. We were sanctioned by an alphabet government agency to put a stop to several aggressive Sasquatch in the high country in western North Carolina. We all thought it was a joke at the mission briefing, but it was no joke. My partner in our team, what was it?
I said nope.
No joke. Come on. My partner in our team of 12 was my swim buddy when we were just polywogs on Coronado. He is a purebred Native American as one could get. This man wasn't scared of nothing. We were ordered to do, before the briefing, all these agents were showing us slides of what these creatures did to people, adults and children alike, as well as the damage done to vehicles and homes. Anyway, my buddy turned white with sheer fear. He told me this is bad, really bad. When we arrived in the little mountain village town, the local sheriff met us. He said he'd never been more happy to see the cavalry since he had been in Korea. He showed us the actual places where, as he put it, this is where those effers, those big hairy demons destroyed this or killed him, her, or them there. My buddy was taking everything in like I never saw him before. After talking with the sheriff, our lieutenant told us to fire up because we're going hunting. Yeah. As we were getting our gear ready, my buddy said to me, you know, I always thought my grandfather was just telling scary stories about he and his brothers when they fought the wild man. We started in around 1400. By 1600, we found lots and lots of tracks. We started tracking them. We made out at least seven different individuals. We made first contact at around 1930, and it was almost dark out. The point man stopped dead in his tracks and spoke into his headset. I see one. It's effing huge. Lieutenant said, if you have the shot, take it. He shot this massive hairy beast with a 7.62 millimeter round, and it acted like a mosquito bit him. This creature turned around and let out with a god-awful roar. Our point man, though, quickly switched to full auto. This time, the creature dropped like a rock after 10 7.62 millimeter rounds cut up his chest. After first contact, the agents radioed in and said they want one alive. Our lieutenant told them to go F themselves. It took 3 days and nights and almost no sleep, but we dropped seven hairy bastards. We found the missing people, or rather what was left of them. We had one casualty when a team member was snatched straight up into a tree. This sounds like the Predator storyline, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got time to bleed.
One was snatched up into a tree. There was nothing anyone could have done for him. To this day, thinking of those 3 days sends chills down my spine. You won't find those 3 days in any military record or mission log. Going into our mission debriefing, when normally we are asked 1,001 questions about every shot fired, every angle we fired from, every angle we fired on, etc., we were simply told that the past 3 days we're doing rigorous mountain training, and during that training period, you lost a man. And with that, the debriefing team stood up and walked out. Now, normally, we have individual debriefing before whole team. This was the one and only time it was just team. So to answer your next question, after 3 days, government agents came in and removed all seven corpses and flew them out. Yikes. That's amazing. Terrifying and amazing. Hello, my name is Janaea, and I wanted to share a few of my own paranormal experiences that have occurred within the past couple of years. I have had a few in my childhood, but the ones I experienced as an adult are crazy. I've been told that I am an empath, and I often have dreams about my family members after they passed away. So I always have been sensitive to the paranormal. In 2009, I bought my first home at age 27 in Pittsburgh, California, a suburb of San Francisco and Oakland, California. I was a single woman, and a 1,700 square foot home seemed like a mansion compared to the 900 square foot home I grew up in San Francisco. And I had my pug, Pebbles, and the fear of what was outside was scarier than what was inside to me. At the time, I ended up adopting a shelter dog named Capone at 5 months old, and he was supposed to be my protection. A month after my home purchase, I threw a large housewarming party, which was just an excuse to have a keg. About 25 people were in attendance, and it turned out to be a fun night. At the end of the evening, my home was filled with people who slept over, so there wasn't any drinking and driving. My friend Teddy is a medium, and he was sleeping on the couch in the living room when I came down for water in the middle of the night. He said, have you met your friends yet? I responded with, are you drunk? No, he said. There's an old man from a different time period and a young woman wearing a hooded sweatshirt. They both say they are your friend. My mind wandered as I began to think of any friends or family members that passed that fit that description that he gave me. The old man showed me a vision of him working on the fireplace. I told him not to scare you, and he said he won't because he likes you. Well, months passed, and I never had any occurrences that I observed. And in March, I had another party for my birthday. Once again, I had a house full of people, and towards the end of the night, my friend Andrea needed a room to change in. But every space was occupied. She went into the laundry room to change, and while she was bent down getting dressed, a soft voice whispered in her ear, "There are consequences of what you do." Andrea was so spooked that she never slept over again. In 2010, my mom and stepdad moved into my home because my mother was ill. By August, my mom nearly died and was hospitalized for nearly 3 months. When she was able to finally come home one day, we were both sitting in the kitchen nook area. She was sitting sideways in the chair with her arms resting over the back of the chair. I was sitting at the kitchen counter a few feet away from that nook table when the table slid across the floor at least 2 feet. My mother began to freak out and said, "Did you see that?" I responded with yes, but we weren't going to talk about it, and I meant that. 5 months later, my mother succumbed to her illness. The last 2 months of her life, she was in a confused state. Then, later, a coma. I had been planning a trip for over a year to New Orleans for Mardi Gras 2011, and I felt rather guilty leaving Mom, even though I went to see her daily. I finally convinced myself it was okay to go, and a week before I was set to leave, I had a dream with my mom in it. It was my birthday, and there was a big party. I remember being so happy that Mom was there. When the party ended, I was going on a trip, and I said, "Come on, Mom, let's go." She started crying and said, "I'm sorry, but I can't go with you." I remember waking up in tears because I felt my mom was telling me she was going to pass away. I went to Mardi Gras that week, and before I left, I bought Mom some red roses and told her to wait for me. I ended up having a decent trip, even though my mother was heavy on my mind. The day after I returned, I went to see my mom before work. She looked awful. I told her, "It's okay, and I'm not mad that you might decide to leave." I remember some of the nurses telling me that my mom said she was going to fight because she knew I needed her. Because I was an only child, and my dad had already gone. I left for work shortly after and received a call about 2 hours into my shift that my mom had passed. She waited for me to return before she died. I had noticed for a while that I was always seeing shadows out of the peripheral vision while I was sitting in my family room. This is the same area where the fireplace and kitchen nook is located. I never told anyone because I always had an explanation for the occurrences. I figured I was just tripping, but it was always the same thing, a shadow coming out of the hallway towards the nook, and then it would just disappear. Now, as years passed, my cousin Carl came to stay with me, and for the first couple of months, he wasn't working until he found stable employment. One day, we were both sitting in the family room when I asked him if he ever saw anything in my house. He said, "You mean the shadow that walks out of the hallway then dissipates?" I was in complete shock that my cousin validated exactly what I had witnessed for years. Now, fast forward to 2014, and my cousin Carl had moved out with his daughter and got married. He was on a stable path, involved in church, had a job, and still would come over daily to my home to help care for my diabetic stepdad, who had started to develop dementia. On Valentine's Day, my cousin stepped out of his car with his daughter by his side and had a massive heart attack. He passed. I was completely devastated, and within the next couple of weeks was in a daze. Every morning, I waited for him to come over before work, and we would have conversations about life over breakfast. After losing my entire immediate family, Carl was all I had. We had been raised like siblings together, and I felt lost. I waited for him to come into me in my dreams. I hadn't had the opportunity to say goodbye. A month later, that dream came. I entered a room, and Carl was sitting at a table. I was so happy to see him that I embraced him. He stood up from the table, kissed my forehead, and said, "I'm proud of you, Nia." He then walked into the light. Now, my father, who had passed when I was 5, and I witnessed his demise in a violent pedestrian car crash, I remember my mother's drinking escalated after that, and I spent a few years in counseling through my elementary school. I used to talk to my dad, who I was very close to, and is probably why I was in counseling. So, it's been years since I've had dreams or received messages from my father, but this particular day in 2015 started off strange, to say the least. My father had raised me listening to dub reggae, and there's this particular Bob Marley song called Three Little Birdies that always reminds me of my father. I usually fast forward the track because it makes me more sad than happy, but that morning while I was in the shower, the CD had skipped tracks to that song and was replaying while I was in the shower. I noticed and thought of how strange that was, but didn't think much of it. After I got dressed and proceeded to drive to work, I turned on my local radio station, which was mostly hip-hop music and house. Three Little Birdies was playing once again on the radio. I was stunned, enough so that I turned off the radio and spoke aloud, saying, "Okay, Daddy, I get it. Every little thing is going to be all right." I even called my boyfriend and now husband on the phone to tell him about the incident. He said, "You know, he's always with you, right?" A few minutes later, I was approaching my work exit on a freeway when the lane came to an immediate stop. Thank God I had already slowed down and figured I could gently pull into the emergency lane to avoid hitting the car in front of me.
Problem is, the car in front of me had the same idea, and now I had nowhere to go. There were people standing in the emergency lane, so I decided to turn up the embankment to avoid them and flipped over. I was able to break myself free from the crash and nothing but a few cuts from the glass and bruises. And guess what? That day, every little thing was all right. I got the message loud and clear. I have a few more, but these are my favorites. I hope you enjoyed my story, and I want to say I appreciate and enjoy your podcast every week. Best wishes, and that comes from Janaea, or Jania. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Thank you very much for sharing. What a fascinating and lovely story. All right, Tim, we teased it. I had a couple of black-eyed kid encounters.
Yeah.
I said we'd wait for Theater of the Mind.
Right.
How about if we share it now?
Okay.
All right, let's begin, shall we? This is, sorry for resending this. I just heard the beginning of my experience, which we started last week and stopped him. Got all excited to hear Dave's storytelling voice telling my memories. Super funny how you guys got sidetracked by Lance Storm and moved on. I laughed pretty hard, feeling almost ribbed by Dave.
Aw, don't
feel almost ribbed. We totally ribbed you.
Right.
You guys make your fans, I call myself your darkling, feel like part of the show. Anyway, I do hope to get chills hearing Dave recount that night some other time, I guess. Get better, Tim.
I'm trying.
Well, how about if I help you get better by telling you this story, Tim?
I don't think that
a black-eyed kid encounter.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I once had a black-eyed kid experience, and to this day am living with the effects. When I started college in 1999, I used to babysit for book and tuition money and had a family that I regularly babysat for. The father was very kind and protective, but had recently been more so. It would become obvious why later. They lived in a cute little house about 15 minutes away from my hometown of the Isle Blizzard, Quebec. They had a farmer's field and woods surrounding their property. On this particular night in October, I was preparing the kids for bed when we heard a knock at the door. The young boy was 7 or 8 at the time and was very helpful and sweet. He just offered to go get the door. I knew his dad would be mad if I let him answer the door, so I called him back and went to get the door myself. Here is where things got weird. They had 4 cute cats that would follow the kids and I around all the time. I had not yet noticed they were nowhere in sight. As I got to the door, one of the cats came bolting down the hall and started pawing at me and meowing loudly. I thought it was weird behavior. I looked up and couldn't see the others, just the kids in the living room. As I reached for the door handle, the cat took off as if I had sprayed him with water. I opened the door about halfway and saw 2 kids, a boy and a girl, both dressed very old-fashioned. They looked like they were from the 60s and had straight black hair. They said in unison, "Can we come in?" They never really looked up at me. They just looked forward. Now, I thought it sounded rehearsed and creepy. I thought to myself, no way, this has to be a prank. What was with this? The children of the corn? Nobody talks in unison like this. I told them that it was too late. The kids are going to bed now. Come back another day. Just then, they yelled, "No, this is our only chance," again in unison. Then they calmed down and said, "We won't be here tomorrow." I still remember the smell as they stood there with the door partly open. It smelled like they had been sitting in rotten food. Imagine if you burnt some stew and let it get cold and rot. But it wasn't overpowering, just a hint of this nasty meat smell. Now, Dave, I know you're probably going to figure that I probably shrieked, but I calmly said, "I'm sorry, it's just too late tonight." With my eyes open so wide you could probably see my lashes touching my eyebrows, I suddenly felt sick and panicked. I reached for the door handle with both my right hand and left hand, with my right arm across my body, and the girl bit my arm hard. I slammed the door, yelling something that those kids I babysit for probably shouldn't have heard. I started to cry as it was bleeding and pounding. I was both mad and scared. I flipped on the lights and ran to the living room window. I grabbed a hockey stick on the way past the closet and looked out the window. There was no one there. No one in the yard. No one in the driveway. They could not have gone the other direction because of the chicken fence they put up for their dog. The family had lost their dog just a few months ago and still had a 5-foot-tall chicken fence with steel fence poles. I managed to calm everything down and get the kids to sleep. I told them the kids, the ones at the door, are jerks and not to be friends with kids that act like that. That night, I didn't study. I didn't sleep. When the parents got home, I told them what happened, and the father asked me if I got a good look at them. I told him I did, and he asked me about their eyes. I nearly peed myself when I realized I only ever saw black, no white at all. It had never struck me. He asked me if they're blue, green, brown, or black. When I answered black, the mother started crying. The father gently hugged me from the side and said he will take me home after I get my bite looked at. I talked to a bit to the father, and he told me that the same kids with black eyes had scared his wife. He had put a basketball bat or a baseball bat in the coat closet next to where I found the hockey stick. I wasn't sure if this was a good thing or bad thing that I hadn't found the bat when the evil buggers were still at the door. We spent the better part of the night at the ER waiting. When they finally took the cloth off my arm, it wasn't bleeding anymore. It had scabbed up okay. The doctor asked how many days it had been. I said it's only been about 4 or 5 hours. He said it looked like it's healing fast. They gave me a tetanus shot and rabies shot and shoveled me out the door like hospitals here in Quebec do. Now, this part is weird, but please be mature here, gentlemen. Wait, this is the weird part?
Yeah.
Black-eyed kid showing up at your door, biting you on the arm. Now we're going to get to the weird part?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now the please be mature. You can't expect us to be.
We've already held back.
Right.
The next day, I was feeling a bit sick, and my breasts hurt.
Okay.
I was starving and ignored the light nausea and decided to eat breakfast, then brunch, then lunch, then a large snack, then supper, and finally a second supper. Now, I'm about 5'4 and 130 pounds. I'm not a big eater, but I was starving. Over the next week, it was the same every day. I was always so hungry. A bit of nausea, sore breasts. I had no boyfriend at the time and was not seeing anyone. Hmm. In quotations, Tim. Okay. Seeing anyone.
Were you doing anything else?
Mm-mm, she wasn't doing the black-eyed kid boogie, if you know what I mean.
No.
I looked up symptoms online like any mid-20s girl. Now, this was 1999 or 2000, so it took a while to find the info. No WebMD or Google to answer my questions. Everything pointed to pregnancy. I knew that was impossible, but decided to confirm it. I took 6 pregnancy tests over the next 4 days, all positive. First of all, Tim, just let me go on record and say I don't know this woman.
Okay.
I was not there.
Are you sure?
Not my child.
All right, then.
Mm-hmm. 6 pregnancy tests. That's overkill.
I take 7 a week.
Yeah.
But I've figured out now. It's just me eating too much.
Yeah, it's a Krispy Kreme baby you got it building up in there. Dunkin' Donut baby. I was about 2 weeks late, so now I'm panicked. What happened? I didn't do anything. As I sat on my couch and put my hands to my forehead, I noticed the pale scars on my right forearm. I didn't end up with pinkish teeth marks, but white marks, kind of like when you get a tan, but some skin was covered and stayed pale. I went to see my doctor, and he confirmed that I was chemically testing positive. I asked for an examination because I knew it was impossible. He confirmed I did not seem pregnant. I went back every 3 weeks or so for a few months. Thank God we have Medicare here in Canada. I was not pregnant. It's been 14 years. I still test positive. Still no baby. I've considered a side business as a wet nurse, as I'm up to 4 cup sizes and have been since a month after the incident with those kids. The downsides being backaches and incredible appetite. The upside, I don't seem to gain much weight no matter what I eat, and none of my partners ever minded the extra size. But the sad note is my doctor thinks that I will never be able to have children. I have been in a relatively good health. No black-eyed kid sightings either. I heard of cancer, suicide, and all sorts of terrible consequences. All I got was a scar and sterility. I have had regular checkups and no cancer of any kind. I'm sharing my story because only my parents, aunt, and one boyfriend believe me, and I would like to encourage others that have been affected by the BEK to come forward. Not everyone who sees UFOs or Bigfoots or black-eyed kids is a wacko. I'm not saying I'm playing with a full deck of cards either, but I know what I saw, what happened to me, and what happened to the poor family. Thanks for listening to my story. This is the first time I've told anyone but those close to me. Please feel free to share.
It's interesting that she says that she had no cancer diagnosis, because sometimes with cervical issues or ovary issues, there is a constant positive test that comes up.
Very strange.
Yeah.
All right. One more black-eyed kid encounter, and then we're going to wrap it up here. Right. Hi, Dave and Tim. I've been listening to the show for a few years now. It's become my favorite among all podcasts I listen to.
Aww. That's sweet. Aww. I was very hesitant to write all this down as the whole incident frightened me to the point where I've taken to daily protection meditations and prayers, burning white candles regularly and saging my home monthly. This happened this last January in a cul-de-sac where I live in Southern California. I'm a 50-year-old woman and live alone in a densely populated area about 3 miles from the ocean. The homes in the area were built in the 1950s, but many have been rebuilt and remodeled, so it's a very nice neighborhood. I'm friendly with all four of the neighbors in the cul-de-sac, but mostly with the people who live in the only two-story home on the street. They're a wife and a husband. I'll call Matt and Ann, not their real names. They live 3 houses over from me, so we are diagonal from one another. I've become so close to them over the past 3 years that I now babysit their dog during the day while I work from home. This past January was one of the coldest we've had in town since 2011. Nothing like where you are in Minnesota, but lows in the 40s at night are unusual in Southern California. It was on a Tuesday morning at around 3 a.m. that I woke up because I thought I could hear Anne talking outside. My bedroom window faces the street, so I often hear the voices of people coming and going, but never this late. This is a street light right outside my window that illuminates the whole cul-de-sac, so I'm able to see well. I waited a few seconds, and she continued to the point where I actually heard her say, "But what do you need? Why?" I got up and looked out the window to a sight that was just bizarre. Their second-story bedroom has a balcony and also faces the street. Anne was standing on the balcony in pajama bottoms and nothing else. Oh, you need to move to that town, Tim.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, holy cow. Leaning on both her hands on the wood balcony railing, she was talking to what appeared to be 3 children who were in the driveway all looking up at her. I was looking at the back of them, but I could tell it was 2 boys and a girl. The tallest boy was the size of an 11 or 12-year-old boy, had on jeans, sneakers, and a hoodie with no hood up. The next boy was the size of an 8 or 9-year-old, dressed the same as the taller boy, but his hood was not up. He had dark, messy hair. The girl was the size of a 5 or 6-year-old, had on a very wrinkled short-sleeve dress, no coat, flip-flops, and had long blonde hair that looked as if it needed combing. My first thought was, oh my God, they must be freezing. It was in the 40s that night, clear and cold. Not wanting to embarrass Anne, I just opened my window a crack to try and hear a little better. Her voice was odd, confused, concerned, and yet sort of monotone. I could not hear the kids talking at all. After a few seconds, I saw the little girl lift her arms up to Anne. I literally shook my head to see if I was seeing this right. I heard Anne sort of unsure, okay. And she started to reach down from the balcony as if to try to pick the girl up from the ground. She had leaned so far over the edge of the balcony that I knew she was going to fall. You know that feeling when you're about to get into a car accident? You can see it coming, knowing it's going to be bad, but you can't see how to get out of it? Well, that's how I felt. I literally flew out of bed, ran down the hall, and almost broke my fingers trying to get my front door locks undone to get out of the house. Fortunately, I wear PJs to bed every night, so at least I was decent, which was more than I could say for Anne, who was topless and perilously close to falling headfirst off her balcony.
Ooh.
Wow. Stacy's mom has got it going on. I got to the end of the driveway and yelled at her, "Anne, stand up. You're going to fall. Stop." Slowly, she raised her head up to look at me. She looked really confused. I said it again, more irritated this time. "Anne, stand up. You're going to fall on your head and break your neck." Slowly, she did stand up straight again and placed her hands on the wood railing. She just stood there looking at me, confused, with her head cocked. It's like a puppy, Tim.
Aw.
To quickly describe Anne, she is highly intelligent, hardworking, opinionated, anxiety-prone, extremely fit, and very concerned with her appearance, woman of around 45. I have never, in 15 years of living 100 feet from her, seen her with this sort of confusion on her face, nor would I ever expect to see her half-naked where anyone other than her husband could see her. As I saw her stand up, I took a deep breath and brought my view down to the 3 kids standing in her driveway. They had all turned to face me. I immediately knew exactly what was going on and who they were. All 3 kids, completely black eyes. For a split second, I thought that maybe it was just me or maybe the street lighting. But I looked up at Anne and could see the whites of her eyes just fine. The 3 kids had no white in their eyes.
I've heard the reports and stories of them for several years. My brain knew what they were, but my soul was literally shaking in fear. All I could think to do was pray. I'm not religious, but I know the Lord's Prayer by heart, so I just started saying it out loud. After I got through it twice and realized that they and Anne had not moved, I suddenly had a new feeling, anger. I wanted them gone. So I took a big breath and I said, I know what you are. I know what you're trying to do. And if you don't leave right now, I will call someone who will make you leave. My thought was to summon the four archangels. I guess by saying their names, that's how she says it here with a question mark. Mm-hmm. I wasn't actually sure how to go about doing it, but I had been told by a good friend that they will come anytime you call them. And I also knew that to invoke Jesus' name would probably work too. My mind was racing about what sort of angelic assistance I could summon, what kind of white light I could use, what kind of heavenly help I could find when I saw them look at each other and start to walk off. They walked at a normal pace down the street adjacent to us, and I inched barefoot into the cul-de-sac to watch them as they walked away. As they crested the top of the hill and went over it, I finally took a long breath and must have said thank you about 20 times. As I was watching the empty street, I heard a voice from behind me saying, "You need something?" It was Anne, who was still standing topless on her balcony, leaning on the railing. I reeled around and said, "Oh my God, Anne, what the hell?" She just looked at me dreamily, no real expression. So I continued, okay, Anne, you need to go back inside and go to bed, okay? She replied, okay, and started to turn around. I stopped her one last time and said, Anne, when you go back in, lock the balcony door, okay? And don't come back outside unless Matt is with you, okay? She said, okay, went inside, and I waited to hear the lock click before I turned to go home. I looked down the street one more time to see if the creepy trio was gone, and there was no sign of them. When I walked back to my house, to my horror, I realized that not only had I left my front door wide open during all of this, but my security screen too. I stopped in my tracks and stood for a second wondering what to do. I decided to go inside, turn on every single light in my house, and check each room, closet, cupboard, and drawer to make sure the BEKs hadn't doubled back behind me and snuck into my house. I was so freaked out that I decided to leave all the lights on. By this time, it was about 3:30 a.m., so I made up a bed in the living room on the opposite side of the house of the street. Lit a white candle, looked up a bunch of protection prayers and meditations on the internet, and spent the next 3 hours mentally and spiritually protecting my home and street. Sleep? No, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Thanks anyway. I stayed awake until 6:30 a.m. when I sent a text message to Anne asking if I could come talk to her and Matt before they left for work for the day. She said that was fine, but to wait till 7:30. So I dressed. And I waited. At 7:30, I walked over to her house, and the sun and blue sky made the events of a few hours earlier seem like a bad dream, and I actually stopped outside their house to wonder if I had dreamed it. Was I about to make a huge fool out of myself to two people I love and respect? I have no family, and they've become the closest thing I have to that, but I figured I'd just ease into it, and they didn't remember anything. I just chalk it up to some weird kids being in the street, which had actually happened before when parties spill over from other streets, and I'd leave the partial nudity and attempted murder. When I went inside, they both looked really concerned. On top of that, I realized that their dog, who loves me and barks at ants walking in front of their house, has not made a sound throughout the entire ordeal the night before. Nor had Matt, who suffers from insomnia, never made a sound. Both facts made me doubt the reality of the whole thing even more, but I summoned my inner Elizabeth Warren and persisted. Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, the senator.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought maybe she was meaning Lorraine Warren.
No. Elizabeth Warren. The senator.
Is she known to go up against black-eyed kids, too?
She's known to go up against senators. I don't know if they are black-eyed senators or not.
All right.
Dave, I'm not sure.
I asked, so do either of you remember seeing or hearing any kids in the cul-de-sac last night around 3 a.m.? They both shook their heads and said, no, why? So I asked, did either of you feel odd this morning or notice anything weird? Their expressions changed just a little, but noticeable. Matt, who's a fact-based individual, said, what's going on? What happened last night? Were you over here? I do have keys to their home and go in daily to pick up the dog, but would never go in without letting them know first that if they were home. I said, no, why? He said, our balcony door was closed and locked when I got up this morning. We always leave it open a crack so the dog won't get too hot in her crate. But this morning I noticed that it was closed and locked. Ann swears she didn't do it, but I know it was open when we went to bed and I did not lock it. He shot Ann a clear, I told you look. So I cleared my throat and told them the whole story of what I saw and experienced. It took about 5 minutes, and they were silent through the whole thing. When I got done, I noticed Anne's eyes were wide, and she was looking at her hands. So I asked, what's wrong with your hands? She replied, I have splinters in both hands. I didn't go to bed with any and couldn't figure out how they got there. I thought maybe I might have sleepwalked, but I don't have any memory of what you just said at all. Oh, my God. I was out there topless? And what the hell was wrong with their eyes? Why were their eyes black? Are you sure they were black? What the hell? Why would they come after me? She was visibly shaken and clearly upset. We talked for a little while longer, but I have to admit, I tried hard not to bring up the eye thing again, and I basically left out the staying up all night praying part too. They're not religious at all, so I just wasn't sure how they'd take that. Basically, we ended up agreeing that some weird kids had come to their house and that she had slept walked onto the balcony. She actually did that as a child. I may or may not have seen all black eyes on the kids, but was able to make them leave and make Anne go back inside and lock the door. It answered all the questions without being too freaky or mysterious. We're all still great friends. I still care for their dog. And since then, in an unspoken way, I feel like we're even closer now. Well, that happens when you see people's hoo-has on their balcony.
Well, yeah.
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 I had never in my life had an obvious paranormal experience. I do love the subject, though, and I'm fascinated by most of them. I have no idea why this happened or if there was some sort of cause. Hopefully, are you listening, universe? I will never have to run into any other children or people with all black eyes. And that comes from Betty. Thank you, Betty. Another creepy story, Tim. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Christopher Maggard, speaking of creepy, will be here to share his book, Chasing the Haunt. No, Tim, his
book
creepy. Yeah, he talks about his historical journey into the unknown from his early years when he witnessed the most horrific supernatural attacks on his family to his investigations from everywhere from Southern California to Northern Kentucky. We'll talk about that on tomorrow night's show. And we want to especially thank our advertisers, our sponsors for the evening, Birch Gold. You heard me talk about it. It is the company I trust when I do my precious metal purchases in the Birch Gold Group. So contact Birch Gold Group now to request a free information kit on physical precious metals. And to get your no cost, no obligation kit, go to birchgold.com/darkness. That's www.birchgold.com/darkness. And we also want to thank our sponsors, Amazon.com. Whenever you want to make a purchase through Amazon for anything, make sure you visit Darkness Radio first and click on our killer deals link. Click on the Amazon link that fits your area. Those specially designed links, you can bookmark those and make any purchases through those, and a small portion of each sale goes a long way to help keep the show on the air. So please do that. Keep that in mind. We'd appreciate it. And tonight, George Norrie and Coast to Coast is back. If you like our show, you'll love Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, Alternative Health and Fairies and Changelings. Dr. Joel Walk and Varla Ventura are George Norrie's guests on the best in overnight talk radio. So check out coasttocoastam.com for times and stations in your area. That's it for tonight. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. And this is Beyond the Darkness.
Gas, groceries, eating out, it all adds up fast. With the Verizon Visa card, you get rewarded every time you spend. Get 4% in rewards on gas, dining, and at grocery stores. And you can put those rewards toward your Verizon bill or on new tech like a smartwatch and earbuds. Apply today at Verizon. Application required, subject to credit approval. Must be a Verizon mobile account owner or manager or Fios account owner. See Verizon.com/Verizon Visa card for terms and restrictions. The Verizon Visa signature card is issued by Synchrony Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
What does Zyn offer you? Not just hands-free nicotine satisfaction, the freedom to do things your way. When is the right time for Zyn? Anytime you need smoke-free, device-free time for you. Why bring Zyn into your life? Because America's number one nicotine pouch opens up the endless possibilities of right now. Find your Zyn. Learn more at Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.